Well, good morning. Some of you will know already that I'm about to start my third and final year of college. So it's my last year of formation as a Baptist minister at Regents. And I'm starting to be able to tell that I'm almost an accredited Baptist minister because I can't stop talking. And of all the subjects to invite me to come and speak on, you've picked one that I can speak for an especially long time about. So I'm going to do my very best to try and stick to your usual timings, but also I'm not going to make any promises on that. So today in both services, we're going to be looking at Isaiah 58, and we're thinking about the particular instruction in the text, which says, "Give the poor wanderer shelter." And in the briefing I was given to prepare for this morning, it mentioned that if Jesus had a positive attitude towards helping the homeless, then so should his church. And so I was thinking that through this week, and as I was wondering what to prepare, it struck me that you already do. So FBC has faithfully supported the work of 57 West, which is a church for rough sleepers and adults at risk, and you've supported that for the last 2 years. So my hope this morning is that rather than me bringing a, you know, to-do list or a three-point service, I'll share with you some of the work that's been going on already, and hopefully it'll be a bit more of a time of celebration than instruction. So Richard is going to kick us off before I start with a reading from Isaiah.
Isaiah chapter 58, verses 1 to 12. Shout it aloud, do not hold back. Raise your voice like a trumpet. Declare to my people their rebellion and to the descendants of Jacob their sins. For day after day they seek me out. They seem eager to know my ways as if they were a nation that does what is right and has not forsaken the commands of its God. They ask me for just decisions and seem eager for God to come near them. Why have we fasted, they say, and why have you not seen it? Why have we humbled ourselves and you have not noticed? Yet on the day of your fasting you do as you please and exploit all your workers. Your fasting ends in quarreling and strife and in striking each other with wicked fists. You cannot fast as you do today and expect your voice to be heard on high. Is this the kind of fast I have chosen? Only a day for people to humble themselves? Is it only for bowing one's head like a reed and for lying in sackcloth and ashes? Is that what you call a fast, a day acceptable to the Lord? Is not this the kind of fast I have chosen? To loose the chains of injustice and untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free and break every yoke. Is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe them and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood. Then your light will break forth like the dawn and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you and the glory of the Lord will be your rearguard. Then you will call and the Lord will answer. You will cry for help and he will say, here I am. If you do away with the yoke of oppression and with the pointing finger at malicious talk, and if you spend yourselves on behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness and your night will become like the noonday. The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and will strengthen your frame. You will be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail. Your people will rebuild their ancient ruins and will raise up the age-old foundations. You will be called repairer of broken walls, restorer of streets with dwellings. This is the word of the Lord. Bam.
So we read a story of opposites here. Some of the people in the account are homeless. We hear that they're hungry, they're wandering, they're cast out. And others come across as important and holy, and they want to know why God's ignoring their religious activity. except their fasting isn't really well intended. It's a spiritual front. And it doesn't do a particularly good job of covering up the fact that these seemingly important people, on the one side, are at least in part responsible for the situation of those on the other extreme. And God has something to say about that here. And while I absolutely believe that there is a time and a place for fasting in a person's spiritual life, I couldn't help but wonder as I read these verses during the week how those who had no food felt about the fact that some of those who had more than enough were making such a show of choosing not to eat. I don't imagine that felt particularly good. So everything that we read about here is hugely unjust. The exploitation, the falseness of the spirituality, the poverty. It reads as like one awful situation after another. But despite all of these horrific circumstances, this is a text that offers hope. And I promise you, we've just read the same piece of scripture. Isaiah's bringing a challenge to the believers in this account, and it's a really hard challenge to hear. But the purpose of it isn't to condemn the people who he's prophesying to. It's to try to bring about at least the possibility of a new way of living. So there are clear instructions here that God doesn't want empty ritual. Instead, what God is asking, or perhaps more appropriately demanding, is that people are welcomed, clothed, fed, and given shelter. So the orders are clear. The ritual itself isn't a bad thing, but it has to be authentic. Those things that God requires, that we read about in Isaiah 58, are the absolute foundation of what we do at 57 West. Now, that's not to say that we're perfect or that we get it right all the time, because we absolutely do not. But that's what we seek to be and do in Southend. And before I tell you a bit about how we do that, I've got a couple of stories that Simon and Corin are going to share with you from our community, and I've deliberately included them because I'm the minister, so I'm going to say lovely things about us no matter what, and I wanted to give you a bit more of a balanced perspective of what we're about, so thanks.
First, because people told me it was for the homeless. Dan Pratt asked me, "Why do you stay away?" So I went into the old place and I explained. Dan told me to come back, and after a while, I heard the new place was open. I really felt a voice say to me when I was really down, "You need help." God did turn around and say, "Go to 57, God will help you." They did. Being baptized was the best thing in my life. It changed my life. I was baptized in summer 2018 with my daughter, who also comes to 57 with me. Everyone at 57 has helped me, but especially Tinsel. It was a Christmas video we made. I chose the song Feed the World, and we changed the words so that it was about homelessness. I got 2 awards for making the video, which I directed.
And we have this from Gemma. "Because I don't get on with my family and I don't have anyone I can call on if I need help, I find 57 my family. I like it when some people try and help me out. I have trouble with bits and pieces and I feel a bit sad someone might come and have a go at me. At the moment, I feel really bad and I'm not coping. I've been coming to 57 for 5 years, and I was baptized in January 2018. At first, when I went under the water, it felt like I was dying. It felt like I was being born again when I was lifted up. I decided to get baptized because I was hoping all the nastiness and the good things would change my life. I have found that there's been times when I have felt God talking to me and telling me, 'Don't worry, everything is going to be fine.' I can't guarantee it will be in a week or two, but it will come. I have been praying such a lot. I come to 57 because I find it company, so I can talk to people and try and help people if they need it. It's good to talk instead of being lonely."
As you've heard in those stories, the majority of people who gather regularly with us would call 57 West their family. And our hope is that as we walk together, share food and faith, and perhaps get to know each other a bit more, that each person who comes, their suffering might be alleviated, even if it's only for a very short while. Many of the people who come to 57 when life changes, they leave, never to be seen again. And we're mostly okay with that. It's tough when people go and you don't know where they've gone and you don't know if it's because life's improved or life's got worse. But the nature of what we do means that the community is very transient, and so people are always changing and life circumstances are always changing. So we see all manner of need, and we want to meet this need, this idea particularly that people will be fed, watered and befriended. But if we can do any more than that, then that's brilliant. We know also that we're a church with very limited resources, and that means that we're not able to give people houses, although, of course, we would love to. So our unique role, alongside housing providers and mental health services and the council and all sorts of other statutory and voluntary organisations, is that we're a supportive community for people who experience homelessness or social isolation. I'm going to share with you some of the ways that we've done that over the last few months. So this is us outside the community caf. Our community caf is the main point of contact that we have as a group. We run 5 sessions a week at all hours of the day, and anyone can drop in for food, a conversation, a sleep. Most people are in desperate need of rest. Help with filling out forms or perhaps signposting to other agencies. So, as I mentioned earlier, a huge part of our role involves knowing where our boundaries are and when it's appropriate to involve other people, and it's almost always appropriate to involve somebody else. And this vision that we've got in Isaiah of sharing and providing and clothing and including is so broad, and if we tried to do it all on our own, and the temptation is there to do that, we'd either end up not doing it very well or becoming completely overwhelmed by the huge need that there is in our town. So it's important for us to work in partnership. So we recognise that people bring all sorts of complex needs. They often need specialist support. And while the CAF, for the most part, is a hangout, and it's very relaxed, and we, you know, try to not interrogate people as they come in, but let them find their space and get to know them, there are times that the CAF also has involved emergency services or mental health specialists or rehabilitation support or whoever it is appropriate to bring in the room. The other thing that's quite exciting about the community CAF is that it's a space that's owned by the community. So we decorated it together. I feel like I've spent more time in ministry doing DIY than I have perhaps outwardly spiritual stuff. So that's been educational for me. We've made all the decisions together about what our weekly timetable looks like and how we make best use of the space. And members of our community are on the volunteer timetable to help us maintain it as well. So this shared ownership filters through absolutely everything that we do. If you come into the CAF, you won't get table service. What you will get is pointed in the direction of where everything is that you need so that you can go and get stuck in yourself. And I love that because we're such a mixed up bunch of people, when visitors come in, they can't tell who's there to volunteer or who's there visiting. And I just love that mix. And what comes from that, this idea of this space is as, it means that we don't become a service provider. It means that we can offer an incarnational ministry or a ministry of presence to the people who come, so we can serve among them and not down to them. And there's a huge, huge difference when you do that. In addition to the CAF, we've got a number of wraparound activities, and we always bolt these on to CAF time, because if you're a rough sleeper, managing time is really challenging. If you don't have a diary or alarm, you know, how do you get to things? So we try to add stuff onto the CAF so that people are already there and they don't miss out. And there are 4 aspects of our community work that I'd really like to share with you, and this picture is from our chess club. Chess club takes place on a Tuesday morning. We had last year a group of middle-aged men joining our community from all sorts of Eastern European countries. And while if you ask us, we would tell you that we include everyone, in practice, when there's a massive language barrier like that, it's really, really hard. So we found that these guys would come in and they'd be in the CAF and we'd see them most days, but we weren't really getting to know them. And they perhaps weren't really getting to know us. So during one CAF session, one of the guys said that his dad used to be a European chess champion. And after that, chess boards just started appearing everywhere in the CAF. I have no idea where they came from. They were everywhere. And our community worker, Nat, got on board with this pretty quickly and made a day of it on a Tuesday. So the guys, well, the change was immediate. The guys were there every session, all session. And chess is like a language of its own. And there are all ways that you sort of learn to interpret conversation and communicate with each other. And so over a board game, that's how we got to know this group of people who'd joined our community. And so what we do now is every term we award a trophy for the chess champion. You can see two of the people receiving the award there. And as I'm sure you can imagine, this chap whose dad is a European chess champion is just impossible to beat. And he's very tolerant of my learning, which I really value. So the second bit of our community work that's had a huge impact this year has been our annual talent night. It's involved poetry readings. You can see some of the art in the picture. There were dance recitals. Like, this was the liveliest event I think I've been to in my life. And it's such a great reminder to me and to those who volunteer there that while we meet people during what are probably the most challenging circumstances they will face in their lifetime, they're more than a set of complex needs or a problem to be solved. Our community is brilliant and creative and very talented, and without things like this, we wouldn't necessarily get to see that. So it's really empowering to our church family that we're able to share in each other's gifts and skills. So we're always thinking ahead for the next talent night and what that might involve. And one of the things that was so fantastic about this last one that we did, and hopefully we'll roll over into the next, is that there's an artist in our community who is brilliant. And from memory, he paints these absolutely stunning landscapes. And so he brought them to our talent night last year. And from that, he went on to put them up in an exhibition in town with another local artist. He sold two paintings there, and he's since been commissioned to paint two more. And when I spoke to him about it recently to find out, you know, how he was in the paper, so asking how he was coping with his, like, newfound local fame, he said, I can't describe how, like, incredibly detailed these pictures are, but he said to me, I'm going to have to find some new stuff to paint because I'm getting through these pretty quickly and I need to, like, keep myself occupied. He's incredible. So if, when I left here to go to 57 2 years ago, you'd have told me that chess and talent nights would have been an appropriate response to homelessness in South End, like, I absolutely would have laughed at you. But both those activities, we found, have helped us to build relationships with people. And I believe that's always the starting point. No matter what type of ministry you're in, it's about getting to know people and building relationships with people, which has been a lot of fun for us. So alongside our regular groups, we work one-to-one with people. That almost always involves cake. And that means we can dig into particular issues that people bring, particular things that they need support working through. And the challenge this year has been around mental health intervention. And so when people have been in crisis, we've struggled to get emergency services to respond. And that's not because they're not willing to help, because when they're there, they're absolutely brilliant and show our guys incredible care and time. But that said, there isn't a lot of mental health support available, at least where we are. So it's really quite a challenging time for us. And so from that, I joined the local mental health forum, which is where local, it's a mix of sort of professionals and us, because we're not mental health professionals in any sense of the word. And it's a group who come together to discuss what are the needs, what do we need to do about them. So I joined the group really to have a little bit of a moan and to say, you know, this is something that we're facing all the time and we don't want to turn people out onto the street when they're in psychosis or when they're vulnerable and when they can't take care of themselves. We want there to be something else, you know, more provision for us to, you know, refer people onto so they get appropriate support. So the Mental Health Forum continues to meet. And they started a consultation earlier this year asking what sort of provision did we need in Southend, and we filled it out. And from that, they determined that we need a well-being calf in the day and a crisis calf overnight every night. And so we were approached by a company who'd won the contract for that 2 weeks ago, who said, we like your space, we've got a lot of shared people that we're working with, is there any possibility that we could run the crisis calf out of here? So it's very, very, very early days, and that's all a conversation that's developing still, but it feels like such an answer to prayer for us, because it would enable people to get a mental health assessment the minute they knock on the door. It feels like God is speaking into something that we've been struggling with for quite a few months now. And the other, I suppose, reassuring part of it is that it gives us the opportunity to pioneer a new type of mental health support in our town and what that looks like. And I think the idea of the church engaging with statutory services in this way to meet local needs is a really exciting opportunity for us. So we're thinking about it as a community, but would value your prayers as we discern whether or not this is a right fit for us and if it's something that God is calling us to support. On a lighter note, the fourth and last activity I'd like to share with you is Project Tinsel, which you heard about in one of the stories. For my last 2 years at 57 West, I've committed to some sort of 11th hour Christmas activity. I'm sure I'll decide in November this year that perhaps we should do something different. The first one we did that was a nativity, and the second tinsel was a video, and that's a screenshot of the video there. And this project gave group members the chance to learn some letter writing skills, some budgeting, they did some filming, they did some acting, and because they owned it from beginning to end, it was sort of like, you know, here's some resources, off you go. And they managed the whole thing, which was awesome. And it was overseen by South Essex Media Productions, who were absolutely fab at tailoring everything to what we needed. So it gave us last Christmas 3 months of skills and creative workshops. And while I appreciate that it's September now, and it doesn't feel right at all to play a Christmas video, I'm going to do it anyway. So I'll save it for the end of the service, because our community are so excited about this video. And to be honest, if I go home and tell them that I haven't shared it, things aren't going to go very well for me. So for my sake, watch a Christmas video in September, please. So that's our CAF and our community work. But because we're a church, of course, we've got a number of overtly Christian activities. Although I'd want to call everything we do ministry, whether it looks particularly outwardly spiritual or not. And in summer last year, we celebrated 3 baptisms, and this is a picture of one of them. Each person who was baptized had a very different story, and we heard sort of snippets of those earlier. And what surprised me as we worked through some of the baptism prep, and I hadn't at all appreciated might be an issue, was that because of some really difficult previous life experiences, there were some who were absolutely terrified of getting in the water. And that came out in the stories. And there's no manner of preparation, you know, there's no extended baptism course that can dig into that or address any of that. So they were incredibly brave to get in the water and find a way of doing this anyway. So we had some creative solutions. So we poured water on people as opposed to asking them to lay back. And then that led to lots of conversations for us about what is baptism and why do we do it this way and why might, you know, other people do it different ways and all those things. We also baptized somebody who came to faith following a rehabilitation program. And while life is by no means perfect for them now, things are better and faith has played a huge role in that. And I absolutely love the line in the story that we heard earlier that said, God's told me everything's going to be all right and it might not be next week, but I trust that it will come. And that seems to be a bit of a theme of life for us at 57. And I think they show incredible faith and patience in waiting for that to come. So we tell people as Christians that the gospel leads to transformed lives. We believe that. But we've had the real privilege in situations like this of seeing it worked out where we are over the course of the year. So we've now got this group of newish Christians that's formed. And so we're starting to work out what does discipleship look like for us in this setting and what's helpful in for us to put in place as we nurture new believers. And one of the things that I love about this group is like their incredible like gift of pastoral care. They're very quick to welcome new people who come into their group. Like, you just get absorbed in, and they take care of people really well. Two from the group have offered to be prayer leaders for us, and we've not had those before. Prayer is a feature of our life, but we've not had people from the community say, oh, well, I'll come and own that. So that's a lot of fun. And one of our volunteers has started taking a Saturday church service once a month. So we're seeing like all sorts of like shoots of stuff all over the place, which is exciting because people's spiritual journeys, you don't always get to see what's going on. Sometimes you don't ever get to see what's going on. So these like tangible markers are such a good reminder that God is working at 57, and it makes it like such an exciting place to be. So some of the practicals. I've been at 57 for 2 years now. A lot has changed, but it feels like in the last year that change was accelerated. Our community has grown. We moved into our new premises 2 years ago, and with us being more central and being involved in things like the church winter night shelter, things have increased. And while it's not a numbers game at all, we're now engaging 250 people in Southend, which is exciting, but also really sad because people are coming to us because they have incredible need. That presents a nice problem for us in the sense of we now need to work through what does pastoral care look like for a group of this size. I'm never going to personally know well 250 people. So how do we work that? How do we manage that? What does discipleship and pastoral care look like? On top of that, we've had an entire change of trustees this year and some movement in our staff team. So most notably, Dan Pratt, who many of you know, left last year. So while he was at 57, for those who don't know, Dan's the former minister of 57 West. And while he was there, he started some work around modern slavery and set up some networks that were seeking to educate people about modern slavery and aiming to end it. That work took off beyond expectation. So Dan left last year to become the National Anti-Slavery Coordinator full-time. He's still living in Southend, and we see him occasionally, so it's always nice to check in. But what that does mean, in a very practical sense, is that you can send him a separate request to come and share about his work. And I'm sure he'd love to do that. Because Dan moved on from his role, I became the sole minister at 57 West a year ago. I didn't feel ready for it at the time, and 12 months in, I still don't, so I don't think that's ever really coming. And we've got an incredible volunteer team, so it's not as challenging as I perhaps make it sound. And then in 2 weeks' time, it's all changed again, because our community worker, Nat, who has been with us for 18 months now, starts a Baptist ministerial formation course at Spurgeon's College in London. So she'll train for ministry and will be her placement church for that 3 years. So that's really exciting. And what's so great about it is that as a community, we got to affirm and support that call through the whole ministerial recognition process. So because I came from here to go to 57, we've never called a minister from within ourselves. So that's been a huge development in our church life as we've journeyed with Nat. And Nat starts that process as I begin my final year at Regents, which means I'll be having some kind of, well, a 57 West interpretation of an ordination service next summer, which you will be getting an invitation to at some point. So that's a bit of an overview about where we are, what our ministry looks like, what the team looks like, and how things have changed for us, especially in the last year. If I'm really honest, I don't have a list of pointers to give you in terms of how we live out this challenge that are given to the people of Israel in the text that we read earlier. We find at 57 that we often start with a plan, and then we pray about it, and then we change it, and then we learn from some stuff that we've done, and then we change it again. And what we end up with looks absolutely nothing like what we set out to do, but is infinitely better. So if there's one thing I've taken away, it's that there's no blanket right answer as to how we live out our responsibility to the homeless. It probably looks different everywhere you go. But as long as we're doing it, whatever it looks like, I don't think that really matters. So I want to close, before I play you this video of Project Tinsel, just by passing on our thanks from the community at 57, because we're supported because you live out Isaiah's mandate in the present day. So thank you very much.
It's Christmas time, there's no need to be afraid. At Christmas time, we're letting light and we banish it. And in a world of plenty, we can spread a smile of joy. Throw your arms around the world at Christmas. The greatest gift they'll get this year is life. Oh, with nothing much to eat, one that leper on their feet. Do they know it's Christmas time at all? Peace to you is the last one. Here's to them underneath that burning sun. Do they know it's Christmas time at all?
You and Todd, but the pride for the tables turn, but you survive. We gotta feel guilt, just selfless, giving all up to the homeless.